It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. 3 weeks from today, midterm elections, November 6th. Of course, early voting has already started. Perhaps you've already voted. Make sure that in any case you do get to vote in these midterm elections. In this half hour, we want to talk about some of the state races that don't receive as much attention as the congressional and gubernatorial races, elections for the Secretary of State, Secretary of Agriculture, Attorney General, State Auditor, State Treasurer. And also, we want to talk about the key races in the State House Legislature to find out if anything is afoot there. As far as trends, joining us to do that, Chris Larimer, Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Ben.
Bill Petrosky of the Des Moines Register, where he is a politics and state government reporter, joins us as well. Hi, Bill.
How you doing, Ben?
Good. Let's start with you, Bill. Give us the lay of the land in the Iowa State House, in the House and the Senate, both controlled by the Republicans. Describe the situation there and what we may see change in these midterms.
Well, there are just furious battles underway on a local level, though, all over the state. In fact, I suppose a lot of the listeners out there already had many of these candidates and their workers knocking on their doors. What's happening in the Iowa legislature is kind of a little bit akin to what's happening in the United States Congress. There's a huge battle underway for control of the Senate, but it really looks like the Republicans are going to remain in control. In the Iowa House, the GOP also controls that. You know, the Republicans hold the trifecta. They hold control of the entire state house practically. But the Democrats think that they have a very good chance at flipping the Iowa House, and Republicans, of course, are fighting back very, very, very hard. So there are a lot of local campaigns underway all over the state that are very, very hardly fought.
Mm-hmm. And if we think back to 2016, that is when the Democrats lost control of the Senate, right?
That's absolutely right.
By a surprising margin, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Republicans control the Senate right now by 29-20 margin with one independent. We know that for sure that the Republicans are going to win that independent seat because there's only one candidate on the ballot. This is far northwest Iowa, and there's a Republican named Zach Whiting from, I think it's from Spirit Lake. He's going to win that. He's the only person on the ballot. There's another seat that's a Democratic seat, currently held by Senator Chaz Allen. He's not running again. The Democrats nominated a second candidate to replace him, and the second candidate fell off, decided to withdraw. Now there's a third candidate, Dan Neeland of Altoona, and he's lost two previous bids for the Iowa House, and his wife was recently indicted on federal charges of Social Security fraud. Neeland is opposed by Representative Zach Nunn, a Republican from Bondurant, and he's a heavy favorite to win that race. There's a whole bunch of other really good races for the Iowa Senate underway all over the state, but a couple of them that I just want to mention was one involved Senator Majority Leader Jack Whitfer of Ankeny. He's a former Iowa State University football player. He's facing a real tough race by Amber Gustafson. She's an Ankeny Democrat, and she's a former state chapter leader of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. One other one I just want to mention, Senator Julian Garrett from Indianola. He is somebody who shepherded through the Sanctuary Cities Bill in the Iowa Senate, and he's opposed by Democrat Vicki Brenner of Winterset, who's a retired Indianola high school teacher. I think he had gone in this race being a pretty strong favorite. I'm hearing a lot of things that she is running a very hard race. Just to mention some of the situation over in the House, what is happening is that the Democrats, a lot of their thinking that I'm hearing is that they see a path through the suburbs in the Des Moines suburbs and in the Cedar Rapids suburbs and some other places. And I think part of this is the thinking that a lot of women who might have voted Republican in the past will vote for Democrats, and there are some very, very good races going on there. That's kind of the lay of the land
mm-hmm.
right now.
So that's exactly the point I wanted to ask about. Listening to national Democrats, you would believe that there would be a blue wave, and it sounds like that when we get down into more and more local races, that that blue wave gets, well, maybe the Republicans put up sandbags to keep with the imagery. I don't know.
Right. I have always said that if you get a really, really strong wave election, like with Trump in 2016, that can impact all the races down to dog catcher, and that's the fact of the matter. But in most years, most of these things are fought out on a local level. It's one good candidate against another good candidate, and I think we've seen a lot of strong candidates running for the Iowa legislature from both sides.
Mm-hmm. Chris, your thoughts on what Bill has been saying there?
Well, I think it makes sense in terms of thinking about this. Are we going to have a blue wave at the federal level, but perhaps a red wave or just staying red at the state level? I mean, mm-hmm. Is this going to be an election like in 2006 where it really was a blue wave that swept all the way down the ballot in terms of sweeping through the state legislature and Democrats getting unified control of the state legislature or of state government in Iowa for the first time in, I think, 42 years at that time? Or is this going to be a blue wave that's limited to more federal races? I think what makes this hard to really grasp is not only how far the wave extends, but when you get down to these state legislative races, the research will tell you that, you know, voters sort of make a break in terms of how they're thinking about things. When they're thinking about state legislative races, they start to think about perceptions of the state economy, not necessarily what's going on at the federal level. And so, mm-hmm. you know, to what extent does a blue wave break through that mentality or that thinking when it comes to vote choice for these state legislative races? And the other part of it is, when you get down to some of these smaller races, you know, there's a question about the extent to which party ID matters, whether the D and R next to a candidate's name really matters. I mean, the case in point around here in Cedar Falls, the incumbent Walt Rogers is running against Dave Williams. They are next door neighbors on South Main Street here in Cedar Falls.
All right.
So you can drive down South Main Street and see yard signs for both candidates all over the place. And so if you're neighbor to both of those candidates, does party ID matter, or is it more that you're neighbor to both candidates?
Right, and I think you're also alluding to this, true, when you see a poster or some kind of billboard with a candidate on it, they choose to what degree they identify with the party. Some of these, you look at Bill and you don't even know what party they're in, right?
Oh, absolutely, right. You're absolutely right.
Bill, what are the key issues that you would point to that you think in these state races, I mean, we can just tick through some of these major things because so much has been happening in these last two sessions of the legislature, the fetal heartbeat bill, taxes,
right.
Sanctuary cities.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've just named a few.
I can just tell you what the Register's Des Moines Register's Iowa poll showed. Number one is health care, period. Number two is education. Number three is the economy. But you also have these things, just like you said, the abortion ban, the fetal heartbeat law, the overhaul of the state's public employees worker laws. Believe me, there are people out there who they felt like that kind of thing where those votes were daggers in their hearts, and they are out for payback. People want a revenge on those. But whether they're going to get that, I don't know. But those are very, very strong reasons why a lot of public employees are out there knocking on doors for Democrats, and why a lot of people who are affiliated with Planned Parenthood who are opposed to abortion are fighting like mad to defeat Republicans.
Mm-hmm. And unlike in the federal Senate, the U.S. Senate in Washington, this state Senate, senators are elected for 4 years, right, Bill?
That's correct. We've got 25 seats on the ballot right now.
Mm-hmm. And 50,
out of a 50-member Senate.
50.
That's exactly right. Whereas the House, all 100 people are on the ballot.
Okay. So to finish up this conversation about the Iowa State House, we have a 50-seat Iowa Senate. We have a 100-seat Iowa House. Bill, I'm trying to read what you're saying. So if one is more likely to flip into Democratic hands, which would you say it would be?
Oh, definitely the Iowa House. And whether or not that happens or not, but I'll tell you, a lot of Democrats are very, very convinced that they're going to retake the Iowa House. A lot of Republicans say, prove it, you know. But it does look very doubtful that the Democrats will retake the Iowa Senate this time. I think what a lot of Democrats would like to do is to make some progress this time. with the idea of flipping the Iowa Senate in 2020.
So let's talk a little bit about some of these races we don't hear as much about that are on our ballot. Chris, let me turn to you and have you tell us about the Secretary of State. We have a Republican and the incumbent, Paul Pate, of Cedar Rapids, elected in 2014. His Democratic challenger, Deidre DeGier, she's been on this program as well as Paul Pate. How do you size up this race?
I think this is one of those races that, you know, potentially could be caught up in the wave election. I mean, you know, the average voter is probably not thinking in a lot of detail about the Secretary of State's election. The average voter may not know a lot about what the Secretary of State's office does. And so if there is a wave, these are the types of offices that are likely to be caught up in it. These sort of bureaucratic type offices that are actually up for election in Iowa, whether it's Secretary of State, Auditor, Treasurer, Secretary of Ag, Attorney General. I think in this case, you know, for the Secretary of State's race, this seems to be turning entirely on not only a blue wave, whether or not that actually happens and goes down ballot, but also the issue of voter ID. This is something that both candidates have talked about. This is something that the current Secretary of State, Paul Pate, has pushed for, and actually the Iowa legislature passed in terms of having voter ID. This is the first year where it's sort of the slow rollout for voter ID. And Deidre DeGier has been out against it. She's received some high-profile endorsements in the past, including from Barack Obama. She was profiled in the New York Times. So among these sort of, I like to think of this group of races as sort of these bureaucratic elections, I think this is probably one of the most high-profile one. And I think a lot of people are wondering how competitive this will be. And if it gets caught up in the blue wave, then there's potential that Deidre DeGier could win.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, when you say this, if I'm just trying to think of whatever average voter going into the ballot booth, and as maybe is the case in a lot of cases, that they don't really know that much about the candidates, but they may be aggravated by politics at a national level, and that's why a Secretary of State may be caught up in a wave more than the State House.
Yeah, potentially. I think that's the case, right? Because they're probably hearing about the federal races. They may be hearing about the race for governor, which is listed ahead of it on the ballot. But then after that, they may not know a lot about each of these candidates simply because not a lot of people follow these races. These races, you know, you don't see as many ads, although you're seeing more ads now for these types of races. But they're a little bit harder to follow, and they're not as intuitive in terms of what the offices actually do, what the responsibilities are for the elected officials who win these offices.
So tell us, the Secretary of State is in charge of what?
It's in charge of elections. This is the person who's dealing with elections. If you go to the Secretary of State's website, a lot of it's dealing with elections, dealing with voter registration, and a number of issues related to kind of election management of the state. And so it's obviously a very important office, like all of these are, but it's one that's directly relevant to elections.
So let's talk about Secretary of Agriculture. We have a Republican candidate, the incumbent Mike Nagy, current mm-hmm. Iowa Ag Secretary, the Democratic candidate facing him, Tim Gannon. Tell us about these two candidates and what you see in this race.
Well, again, this is one of those races that the average voter is probably not going to know a lot about. You have Mike Nagy, who's taken over for Bill Northey, who took a position in the federal government. So Mike Nagy is sort of the incumbent in this case, and you have Tim Gannon running against him. But again, the issue here is sort of stewardship or management of the agricultural sector of the state. But I think, again, for the average voter, they're not going to know necessarily the differences between these two candidates, let alone if they've heard of either candidate. They may have seen a few campaign ads here and there, but beyond that, this is probably one of those races where the voter's probably looking more at party ID than necessarily the name of the individual candidate.
What about the issues here of, say, conservation and water quality, how they overlap with the responsibilities of the Secretary of Agriculture? Will this play into informed voters' decisions here?
I think potentially, but I think what's going to happen is that most voters are going to sort of overlay those particular issues with their own partisan lens. And so those issues are going to get caught up in people's own partisan identification or their own party ID. And they're going to use that as a shortcut to assume that either candidate, whichever candidate they choose, shares the policy positions of the voter.
Attorney General, this is interesting. When we look at the Attorney General's race here, Tom Miller. Wow, how many years have we heard Tom Miller, Attorney General of Iowa? He's served, what, 9 terms since 1995, and he's running unopposed? In the Republican slot, there is no opponent.
No, and that's not surprising. As you mentioned, he's a very long-term incumbent, Tom Miller, and really Michael Fitzgerald is the treasurer of Iowa. Both of them are actually probably names that people have seen around, maybe know a little bit more about because they have been around for so long, have been involved with so many things. Those are two individuals, two incumbents that probably get a little bit, that are certainly going to get more name recognition than the other, some of these other offices.
Tom Miller, he was actually first elected in 1978. He had a break in service when he ran for governor back in the, I think it was around 1990 something, like that. And Mike Fitzgerald, he's been around since 1982. Both of those guys, that just goes to show how important name recognition is in some of these offices, because these guys have withstood wave elections in the past, and both of them I think are people who both parties recognize are pretty much doing their job, and nobody's found any great fault with them either.
I wanted to go back before we end this conversation to something you mentioned too, Bill, when we were talking about state house races, certainly to the degree to which it mirrors or doesn't the federal congressional races here. The Democrats have more female candidates in the U.S. House up for election than I think at any time in history before. Are we seeing any of that in these down-ballot races?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things is that the Republicans have recognized this, and I talked with Jeff Coughlin, the state GOP chairman, about this. There's only 2 women. There are 29 senators, Republican senators right now. Only one of them, well, 2 of them, actually, one of them was just elected in a special election. But they went out and recruited 5 very strong women candidates to run, and they think that they have a very good chance of some of those women winning. And, of course, the Democrats, they have a whole raft of women running for the Iowa House, and I think that they see them making some gains there, too.
Mm-hmm. What races have we left off? Did we talk about state auditor?
Not yet, no.
Okay, Chris, fill us in about the state auditor position here.
Well, this is another one that's actually, I think, you know, if you think of the Secretary of State's race, is kind of maybe one of the more competitive, high profile of these 4, as I said, kind of bureaucratic offices. The race for state auditor is probably number 2 right there, with Mary Mossman as the incumbent Republican being challenged by Democrat Rob Sand. Again, you're seeing a lot more campaign ads than perhaps you typically do for this type of office. You know, the candidates have been, I don't want to say overly negative, but they've certainly been making the case for their individual candidacies. And so in this case, the issue comes down to the state budget, auditing of the state budget,
mm-hmm.
Who can better manage the state's budget and keep it on track.
And what are the disagreements that you've heard of between Mary Mossman and Rob Sand? What are they disagreeing about?
My understanding is that they're disagreeing about some of the management of state funds in terms of not only in terms of oversight but where money is spent. And so they're very general. Some of the arguments are a little bit more specific, but it's generally, you know, how is the state's budget being run? Where are we spending money? Are we wasting money? Are we losing money in certain areas because the money is not being spent appropriately?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I should just jump in here and point out Mary Mossman. She is a CPA, and she
right.
has made that to be a key issue in the race. Rob Sand, he's a lawyer, and he's not a CPA, but he points out, you know, he has taken credit, and I think received a lot of credit for addressing this Iowa lottery scandal, and did a lot of investigative work that resulted in the convictions in that case.
Yeah, and that's kind of the topic of one of the campaign ads that's out there for Rob Sand, is exactly that point that Bill made.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, a quick snapshot of what you see possibly over the horizon when we go into 2019 after these elections and the legislature kicks up again here. Your thoughts, Bill, on we will have either this or that. What do you say?
Well, I think I see a couple of scenarios. One is that the Republicans continue to hold the trifecta, you know, the governor's office, both chambers of the House and Senate. And if that happens, you will continue to see a lot of legislation that favors large corporations, that is very tight fiscal management, tight continued emphasis on tax cuts, that type of thing. If there's split control, which is something that's definitely possible, if the Democrats take one of the houses, or even if the governor's office is taken by Hubbell, then you probably see a lot of gridlock. We've seen a lot of gridlock in the past when this type of thing happens. I particularly remember in 2011, after we had split control, after Governor Culver lost and Brandt had returned to office, and there were times where weeks would go by and you'd hardly see any kind of action in the legislature, and that's what can happen.
Mm-hmm. A few seconds for your words to the future. Chris Larimer, Future Politics of Iowa in 2019, what do you see?
Well, I think Bill's absolutely right. If Democrats retain or obtain control of any one of the levers of state government, whether it's the House, the Senate, or the governor's office, then I think you're going to see enormous gridlock. You're going to see action in the state legislature slow down in terms of the number of bills being passed and so forth. I think, on the other hand, if Republicans do retain control of unified government, I think you're going to see them push pretty hard on their agenda, because they know following redistricting, there's a chance that a cycle after that, there's potential that goes away. And so if they retain unified control, they're looking at 2019, 2020, and 2021 session or at least 2019 and 2020 is, you know, potentially their last chances to push through anything on their platform that they want.
Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa, Bill Petrosky of the Des Moines Register, thank you very much.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
That does it for today. Hope you'll join us tomorrow for Politics Day, when we'll focus on Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. Dennis Goldford and Rachel Caulfield of Drake University will join us. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Caitlin Harrop, and Lindsay Moon. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.